It's time for Notre Dame's Best Hockey Show. From the WVFI studios in the second floor of the Duncan Student Center, it's 5 for Fighting Irish. Now, here's your hosts, Andrew McGinnis, Ryan Murphy, and Tyler Reedy. Let's drop the puck.
Please, world. Please. Good?
You're good?
Oh. Yep. Yeah. I can hear myself.
Right. I reset the profile. I don't know what's up.
Oh, we're so back. I mean, we never really got here to begin with. Hold on. I mean, the intro is still playing. Yeah, should we play it again?
Yeah, hold on.
Intro
hold on,
again?
Hold on.
Proper start, folks. Hold on.
It's time for Notre Dame's Best Hockey Show. From the WVFI studios in the second floor of the Duncan Student Center, it's 5 for Fighting Irish. Now, here's your hosts, Andrew McGinnis, Ryan Murphy, and Tyler Reedy. Let's drop the puck.
Well, we have some good news and some bad news. Actually, we have 2 pieces of bad news. The first being the technical difficulties. But I guess then we have 2 pieces of good news because we've made it through. Shout out again, Jacob Irons, the GOAT. The man with a plan.
Executive producer Jacob Irons without a microphone today,
no,
we believe.
Oh, we can't hear you at all.
He is without a microphone. He's
silenced.
Trying, no. No, nothing.
We're just
going
to keep going.
Nothing will stand between him and the microphone.
To him.
We will get there. He will get there.
The good news is we do have a Super Bowl champion in our midst.
Yes.
The bad news is it's not me, but that went out the wayside a while ago. The other bad news is that he appears to be a little bit spoiled, folks. I'm not going
to
lie. Asked how his Monday is going, Kansas City Chiefs fan Tyler Reedy said, quote, good.
Here's the deal.
That is
good.
Ridiculous.
I agree.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And this is someone from the Boston area, man.
Here's the deal, though, okay? We'll get to this in a moment when we talk about Notre Dame hockey, but I mean, I drove 16 hours this weekend to cover Notre Dame sports. I got back.
That was your
I watched a 4-hour overtime Super Bowl that the Chiefs won.
You're complaining
if it
went to overtime?
No. Stay with me here. If I were
I'm
to hang on to the high that I was on last night and carry it into today, I would be able to get nothing done. And guess what? I have a very busy week, as a lot of people do. So I've got to get back into business here.
Sacrificing
joy
for productivity.
Look, man, I've had 2 straight Octobers that have just been a fever dream, and I turned out fine. You can survive for, I think,
have
2
you?
Days.
Have you?
I mean, I'm still here. We're definitely getting Jordan Montgomery, right?
Hey,
right?
Hey, at least I'm not being obnoxious about it. I think that's a much worse
I mean, that
for
is, yeah, but you got to appreciate it a little bit.
I did last night, but... I did
20, not even 24 hours, guys, and his
not
team
even,
won a
not
Super
even
Bowl.
At the parade.
Well, I had 4 classes today.
So
I mean,
you've seen, Andrew, you've seen
we
one
went
of your
to
teams.
Overtime. Pity on you. Your team won back-to-back Super
Bowls. Yeah, I stayed up till 4.
Hi, JJ.
Well, okay, that's
because
pretty good.
Your team won a Super Bowl.
I have a question for everybody.
Yeah,
so, that's fair.
So you've, Tyler, you've seen your team win a championship.
Yep.
Andrew, you've seen one of your teams win a championship.
Well, I've seen two of the Phillies when I was a kid.
Giants.
You're a Cubs fan.
Giants, have you seen your team win a championship?
I have not, no.
You have
not. Hold on, what do you mean?
So I'm a Yankees fan. I've never...
2009! I've seen your team win a championship against mine!
But I don't really count that because I wasn't... Like, 2009, I'm not a considered... Like, I couldn't have told you who's on the 2009 team or who's on that roster.
Can you tell me now? How many 2009 Yankees can you name?
None.
None?
What?
That's crazy.
I could give you Derek Jeter.
Are we sure you're a Yankees fan, dude?
Like, what about A-Rod?
Teixeira.
Yeah,
Robinson Cano.
I could get you some.
David Robertson.
I could get you some.
Who was on the 2022 Phillies?
Mariano Rivera was on that team.
Rivera. Yes. CC Sabathia.
Yes, I can get you guys.
You just said no one.
But like at the moment, I could never have told you besides Derek Jeter, who was on the 2009 team.
Could have gotten A-Rod.
As what? Hold on. So I was born in 2003 as a six-year-old Jake? No.
Well, I'm talking about, like, now.
Oh, now I could have gotten you. I thought you meant from back then.
Oh, okay.
I was like, there's no way six-year-old Jake knows who A-Rod is besides Derek Jeter. Like,
yeah, okay.
Derek Jeter was my guy.
That's fair.
And that is how you start a hockey show.
Yeah,
exactly. Who had production gets into a screaming fight with the actual host on their bingo card? Because if you did, that should be the free space.
Yeah, that's fair.
One word out of my mouth set these guys off. I don't know what's going on
the
today.
The one word was not appreciative of the fact your team won a Super Bowl.
No,
I'm sorry.
The one word
you are drawing
good.
So many conclusions from that then.
Tom,
no.
Maybe we need a separate sports show that is sports talk, but I think we need to start talking about hockey because there was a lot going on this weekend and that fell.
All we need to accurately, you know, fully encapsulate and describe the series in Wisconsin is the name of the show. Five for Fighting Irish, because there were a lot of fives this weekend.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, not the weekend that you were hoping for. I'm sure you made the tryout. I'm just realizing now I forgot to add the little Madison, Wisconsin thing in front of your byline for the Observer, because you were on location.
Oh. So. Hoche said he was going to do that.
Oh, did he?
So he might
Maybe he did.
Yeah.
Hopefully he
I don't
did.
Know.
I haven't looked at it
anyway.
I'm not going to lie. But yeah, obviously, as Tyler alluded to, he was up there in Madison with JJ for one of those games. It did not go very well. It went well for about 39 minutes, and then
it
took a
long?
Turn. Yeah, Notre Dame was outscored, 7-2 after the first 39 minutes of the series, 4-2 and 3-2 loss to Wisconsin. Notre Dame has now dropped four straight. They've scored just four goals combined in those three games. You know, obviously not the end of the world to be swept by the top five team on the road, but it felt like Notre Dame really missed an opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, I talked about this with you, Murph, a lot following Saturday. One of the more demoralizing games, and it's kind of one of the just more soul sucking Notre Dame hockey games that I've watched this year. But it wasn't that they got swept, because I mean we saw it happen at Michigan State. Wisconsin's a really good team too, and Notre Dame for whatever reason has not matched up well with them at all this year, just on a results basis, wins and losses. But it's the way they got swept this weekend. And Murph, I'll let you talk more on this because you and I went back and forth on this a lot. But they got mentally kicked around, especially in the last 10 minutes of that game on Saturday. You take 2 5-minute penalties on Friday, end up taking, I think, what was an entire game's worth of penalty minutes on the weekend. And then Saturday, those last 10 minutes, Henry Nelson kicked out for a second consecutive game for a cross check after the whistle. Just penalty minutes on penalty minutes on penalty minutes. Can't do that against the Mike Hastings team.
Let the record show that Hoche did add the thing online, but it did not make it in the print edition.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, just to pick up off that, like it's demoralizing. I don't think I could say it much better than you did, but the most concerning element for me was just particularly the last half of the second game when they very clearly let the emotions get the best of them. And that's hard to come back from, you know, when you've so clearly lost control of your own competitive will, right? And I think they did. It certainly inhibited their ability to come back and win that game. But I wonder. It was depressing after the game to kind of consider the implications of that for the rest of your season, because you know, is a real head scratcher. And I'm looking at the our agenda here that Andrew McGinnis puts together, and Tyler noted in here. Tyler relives an existential crisis, and I think, yeah, like, I'm sure the existential crisis was different for every Notre Dame hockey fan watching, but, like, particularly for you being in Madison and watching, it was a meltdown.
My head was spinning the last 10 minutes of Saturday. I mean, because you start that stretch with a goal that Wisconsin scored. It ended up being the game winner, their third goal, yeah, on a play where I think you could make an argument that Owen Mellenbacher maybe got pushed into the crease by Paul Fisher on the back end, but Jeff Jackson's complaint, Ryan Bischel's complaint, is that he was taken forever to get back up. And I mean, it's just hard to imagine on a play like that. And I mean, you don't want to nitpick the refs too much when he gets swept, but I mean, it's hard to imagine that he could have slid all the way from the hash marks on in and just kind of hung around in the crease the way he did. But you start with that, you get 5 minute major, a couple minutes later, you have Jeff Jackson having to pull his goalie to make it an even strength game, and somehow Notre Dame didn't get scored on with the net empty during that 3-4 minute stretch. They actually got one on what was a power play during the 5 minute penalty, but yeah, those last 10 minutes were all over the place, and it was just like, oh my gosh, can we get out of here? You know, even though it was a one goal game, felt like it really.
Well, you look at all the penalties Notre Dame took in the third period specifically throughout the series, and all but one of them by a freshman. Mm. Henry Nelson guilty of quite a few. Danny Nelson took one. Cole Knubel took one. Obviously, some of the veterans took some earlier in the game. Zach Plesinski with 17 penalty minutes over the series, including the five-minute major in the first game of the series. So, you know, we've talked about the upside that Notre Dame has with some of these young players, but, you know, guys going into some of the biggest atmospheres they've ever played in, and, you know, this is the downside of having that youth that you're relying on, is sometimes it can result in blow-ups like this.
Yeah, and you want to see them build discipline and resilience, right? And for a time, it did feel like they were doing that, but that was probably in those two categories, discipline and resilience, their worst performance of the season at the, you know, a pretty late part of the season. I'd imagine that has to feel pretty disappointing. And it's particularly things like you're talking about with that goal that ended up being the game-winning goal, which, by the way, I actually, watching from home, like, I thought the referees made the right call on. I thought he went flying into the crease. Like, you know, he was tripped. I understand fully understand the debate, though. And, I mean, you might have had a different look at it than the ones they showed on TV. There were only two or three angles they showed on TV. But it's those things that mark a resilient team, right? Your ability to deal with things that aren't totally within your control. Like, there was something, and I'm remembering exactly what it was. Something might have happened out in the neutral zone before that play, too, that was somewhat chaotic. I don't know if the officials missed a call out there. I might be just making things up in my mind. I watched a lot of hockey over the weekend, so I was trying to parse what game was what. Because the Blackhawks had a few things. I watched the Blackhawks game Friday, and Blackhawks had a few moments very similar like that. But it's your ability to come back from those things that are outside of your control that marks a resilient team, and that's ultimately where Notre Dame came up short this weekend, was particularly in that moment when that wasn't against their control. Obviously, the tripping penalty, you could say they shouldn't have done that. Or, I mean, he didn't get a penalty for it. Shouldn't have tripped him into the crease, whatever. But I think you get my point. Like, there was a moment that they failed that resilience test.
Yeah, that's one of the parts that hurts the most, because I think back to that Penn State series at home 3 weeks ago, and that Saturday game was ultimately a three-goal game, but I think Notre Dame was up 3-2 halfway through the third, and we talked about it on here a couple shows ago. You get the pass on a delayed penalty that hits the goalie skating to the bench, goes into the empty net, and Penn State ties the game at three. And then what does Notre Dame do? A minute later, you go on a power play that hasn't been good all year, and you get a huge goal to go up 4-3 and ultimately win that game, sweep the series. And I think I asked Jeff Jackson after that game, like, how much can a moment like that be something that in this final month of the season that you point back to where it gets tough and when adversity starts to mount up to say, hey, we can come back from this? And that's where Wisconsin just hurts, because you got to think back to, if you look completely beyond all the penalties and the lack of discipline, the way the series started with Notre Dame going up 2-0 in the first period Friday, looking very much in control of the game halfway through the series opener. But then they give up two back-to-back in 15 seconds in the final minute of the second period. You have a chance to go into the locker room, second intermission, regroup, say, hey, you know, remember the Penn State moment. You know, remember some other things that have come up throughout the season. It's okay. We can come back from this. I know it feels like we're in above our heads with the way the other teams come back in this 15-second stretch, but I mean, we've done that before, and we've come back from that type of stuff before, and as you said, outscored 5-2 the rest of the series. It just never happened.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. It's like, that was a benchmark. Penn State was a benchmark, and where they were resilient there, they weren't last weekend, and that's what hurt. I mean, it's about game management. Like, I think there's some very simple rules in hockey, right? Like, you don't want to allow a goal in the first 2 minutes of a period. You don't want to allow a goal in the last 2 minutes of a period, and you don't want to allow a goal 2 minutes after you've scored one or given one up, right? And they violated those very simple rules multiple times in Madison. And, you know, when you do those things, when you're not at your best, on your toes in those moments, those part of the game, you're not gonna help yourself to win. And it came back to bite them.
Yeah, and, you know, you're talking about how that Penn State moment, then they were able to sweep Penn State, getting that big, that was the game-winning goal, that power play goal, I believe. Yeah. And how that could have been the defining moment. Do we think this is going to be a defining moment? Because I look at the box scores. I didn't get a chance to watch either game, but I see that Notre Dame was outshot in both games. Saturday, not too bad, 30-25, but then 38-23 in the first game of that weekend series. How do we feel about where this team is going? I know we've talked a lot about, can they get home ice, start the Big Ten tournament? Obviously, this certainly doesn't help with their chances, but also just their odds of, you know, winning games in the postseason. Is this a short-term thing that we think, oh, it's just one weekend, or is this something that we're worried about the state of the team going forward?
I mean, yeah, I'm certainly more worried about it going forward than I was a week or two ago, because, I mean, this is the exact same situation we found ourselves in last year after that Michigan State series sweep on the road.
Exactly.
Same. I mean, yeah, you've got four games left. You're very, very dicey, holding on to that four seed just barely for home ice in the Big Ten. Michigan's probably going to catch you with two games in hand.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they weren't in the four seed going into the last two weekends, were they? I think they were behind and passed somebody.
Yeah, they probably passed Penn State when
into the last two weekends?
I think last year, yeah. I feel like that was
They dropped out of it because of the Michigan State series.
Yeah.
But this, for them, the last two weekends are moved up because of the bye. So it's around the same time that they'll drop out, you know,
granted what happens
this coming weekend.
But yeah, I mean, similar enough situation. By the way, pair-wise, pretty much exact same spot. You know, that's what you're looking at for NCAA tournament. And last year, they, in the final four games against two pretty similarly ranked teams that they're going to see this year, Ohio State at home, Michigan on the road. This year, it's Minnesota at home, Michigan on the road. They took 9 of 12 points last year and went into home ice, Big Ten quarterfinals, lost 2 out of 3 to Michigan State. And Michigan State, who won that series with pretty much an identical ranking to Notre Dame before that quarterfinal, they reached the semis, and I forget how bad a loss it was for them in the semis. I don't think it was too bad to Minnesota, but Michigan State didn't even make the tournament. So I think, for me, that just goes to show, unless you go absolutely nuclear in these last four games, if you're Notre Dame, and you take double-digit points from Minnesota and Michigan, you have to do serious, serious damage in the NCAA tournament, or in the Big Ten tournament, to get to the NCAA tournament, if last year's any indication.
Yeah, and I mean,
it was a 5-1 loss for Michigan State to Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah,
I think, as we've talked about before, by nature, very optimistic person. I also by nature tend to be a little cynical, and like, you know, like the two devil on one shoulder, and like really, really after this past weekend, it was the devil was screaming pretty loudly, the voice of cynicism in my ear. Like, you know, I think a lot of points last year, we were very optimistic, and it never materialized because it was a mountain they had to climb. And I think in terms of, you know, I certainly think in terms of the pairwise, I think the mountain they would have to climb this year is actually steeper, simply because of the if you look at the pairwise, two conferences because the CCHA has not been very good since Minnesota State's dropped off, they're going to get a conference champion in the national tournament that would not be in the top 16, as Atlantic Hockey does every year. And then if a ECAC team that's not Quinnipiac or Cornell wins the ECAC tournament, then you have three bids that are going to essentially not top 16 teams. So you have to make the top 13. You're not talking about the top 16 anymore. You're talking about the top 13. They're 23rd right now. Ugh. Or you have to win the Big Ten tournament. Like, that's really hard.
And what does that mean? Going to Wisconsin or Michigan State, who both swept you.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. And you don't have a win at all this season against Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. That's so tough sledding.
It was tough sledding last year, and it might be tougher sledding this year. So it's I don't know if I can beat the drum of optimism in terms of this year's prospects for the NCAA tournament. I think that's ultimately because the writing was on the wall about that it was going to be another very steep mountain. What was so difficult to watch about the ending of the Wisconsin series?
Well, I guess the silver lining to take from this, at least from a journalist perspective or a fan's perspective, is that whether or not you've called the last month or so of Notre Dame hockey must-win games, I can see why maybe you would. I can see why maybe you wouldn't just yet, but I don't think it's debatable anymore going into Minnesota this weekend.
No.
The urgency's there.
The urgency's
through the roof.
It's like going into Ohio State last year. Like,
yep.
I mean, we were calculating exact points totals, I think, going into those series, and I'm sure we will be at some point this week being like, all right, what has to happen?
Yeah.
Right? They got to get points, right?
Yep.
No matter what.
Yep, it's going to be a big series. Notre Dame obviously swept Ohio State last year. One of those games went to a shootout. Notre Dame certainly hoping for a similar outcome this weekend against Minnesota. I want to zoom out quickly to the big picture here. I don't know how you guys feel about this little format that I created here, but basically I wanted to get your guys like kind of top three tiers for NCAA tournament contenders. So tier one is like your main threats, your Boston College, your BU, teams that you think are the very cream of the crop. Then the tier two is the teams just below that, teams who are serious threats to knock those teams off, teams who you could definitely see winning a national championship and going deep in the postseason. And then tier three are some teams that are maybe a bit more on the dark horse side of things that need the stars to align, but you think might be capable of going on a deep run. I'm not going to set a limit for like any.
That was going to be my exact question. I would say, what are the limits to the tiers?
Yeah, no, you can put as many or as few teams in each tier or all the tiers as you want. Don't all jump at once.
I think I have four in my top tier. I could have a wild card for five.
Okay.
But, I know BC, North Dakota, BU, and Wisconsin in my four.
You're putting Wisconsin in your top four.
Yeah. Okay. I feel comfortable drawing the line there. But I could see, Denver's been inconsistent too much for me, but I could see them if they play the way they've played at times this year, I could see them potentially dipping into that pool. Michigan State, I feel better about them after seeing what they did to Michigan this weekend and knowing the experience they've put together. I mean, they've got an experienced roster, but just as a program, the NCAA tournament experience isn't really there for them in recent years. And Maine's a team that still hanging around up there. Minnesota could get hot down the stretch, and I'd probably cap any wild card options there after eight. So I'd say definitively I've got BC, North Dakota, BU, Wisconsin, my tier one.
This is so challenging.
This is why I sent it to you, Dave.
BC is my lock for the top tier. Is like my lock. I would say that North Dakota and Boston University are also in that top tier. I'm not as high on Boston University as I am BC.
It's reasonable.
Sorry, it took me so long to finish that sentence. I'm deep in thought here. I'm trying to think of the, yeah. I'm putting in my second tier, certainly I'm putting Michigan State and Maine. And I'm probably going to put Wisconsin in my second tier, too. And I'm going to put Quinnipiac in that tier too. So that's first tier is BC, North Dakota, BU, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Maine, and Quinnipiac are my second tier.
No Minnesota?
That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested to see them this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I'm almost, because if I think about it on paper, and I've only ever really watched, I like the way Minnesota matches up against a Boston College. I like the way Wisconsin matches up against a Boston College, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's on their own, right? If I'm thinking of them not in terms of a matchup,
yeah,
right? On their own, do I think they belong in that top tier? I'm not sure. In terms of dark horses, you know, I do think Michigan is, I know they got their kind of their butts kicked by Michigan State, so it'll be interesting to see how they respond. They're in action this weekend, right? Michigan, maybe Ohio State, maybe they're not. Either way, it'll
peek.
Be important to see how they respond. But Providence is a team I'm interested in seeing. I kind of am curious to see whether they can put together something in my dark horse category. And it feels strange to include Denver in a dark horse category, but I think they're in my third tier too.
Michigan is in Hockey Valley this weekend.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so that'll be a big series for them. And if they come back with a sweep, I would definitely put them in, you know, between tier two and three. So I honestly think that the tiers deserve to be rather small, right, in terms of what the teams have proven. And you could, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Obviously, that's what radio shows are for.
Actually, you really,
can. Tell each other if we're wrong. But
you can say it into the void.
I think the tiers deserve to be rather small, you know? So I think the bona fide, I think BC deserves to be the bona fide national title favorite. I don't think anyone else deserves to be the bona fide national title favorite.
I'd agree. And when I look at the schedule this weekend, I'm really excited because a lot of these in-between teams for me that could be seen as dark horses could maybe move into tier two if they get on a hot streak. They get tested this weekend. Like Providence is the last team I leave out of tier two after Quinnipiac. They host BU this weekend. UMass is ranked 12th in the nation. They've been hanging around playing tough opponents all season long. They host BC this weekend. I mean, Colorado College, they're not a team I immediately look to for dark horse status, just because they haven't been relevant in a while.
Good to see them on the list.
Yeah, it's nice to see them around. But they host a North Dakota team that they went to in December and took two overtime games from. Like, are those flukes? Are they going to match up with the Fighting Hawks again? I mean, New Hampshire, a team that was hot early. We're still not really convinced that they can actually win away from Durham. They host Maine this weekend. I know it's not as great as being able to see them try and do something on the road, but I mean, we've got a few of these opportunities to see teams in kind of that 10 to 15 range that have a shot, are still maybe a little bit on the bubble of the NCAA tournament as a whole. They get tested, and I like that.
It's interesting to me because I think they're, and I guess I put Providence probably in this category too, but there seems to be the category of the highly skilled team, and I'm not saying Wisconsin isn't highly skilled because they obviously are, but Wisconsin can win a game 1-0. Maine can win a game 1-0, right? And I think those teams are exceptionally interesting cases to see how they fare in the NCAA tournament, right? Will they be able to essentially out-grit maybe a Michigan State, right? Like, who I think is defensively good in their own right, but maybe a little bit more skilled than, like, well, certainly they're more skilled than a Maine team, right? But that matchup, those matchups are fascinating to me.
All right. Good discussion, gentlemen. Shall we move on to our favorite part of the show? I got to be honest, I forgot we had the show tonight, and so I've already started.
Oh!
The good news is I'm off to a great start.
Oh, I was going to say, no wonder you started.
I'm kind of stumped. The better news is the Flyers are on the grid today.
Oh!
So it's horizontal Flyers, Senators, and 20-plus goals in a season, and vertical Flames, Hurricanes, Capitals. Do you want me to give you the three players I put so far, or you just want to go?
Did you pick all the Flyers players?
No, I actually haven't.
Really?
I only picked one of the Flyers categories so far.
Okay.
I went Flyers, Flames, Tyler Pitlick, 1%. Love my Pitlick party. Still miss him. For a Flames 20-goal season, Mike Camilleri, 2%.
Oh, Mike Camilleri, wow. Former Hab. Mike Camilleri, yeah.
For Capitals 20-goal score, Brooks Like, 1%.
Brooks Like.
Brooks Like.
That's
scored,
a throwback.
Brooks Like scored 20 goals.
I think more than once, actually. He was a sneaky good second line guy.
Has Lars Eller ever scored 20 goals?
I've got some candidates for Philly.
He has not.
I've got for Philly, Carolina, Michael Layton and Yanni Pitkinen. I don't know if either of those guys would score amazingly. I'm sure Tyler smiles at hearing Layton's name.
I'm putting in Layton. 1%.
All right. Flyers, Capitals. Mike Richards is one that comes to mind. There was also the Gudas Niskanen trade. Michael Neuvert is another option as well, too. I'm looking for that, sicko pick. Nick Aubé-Kubel is someone I thought of, too. But he's there currently, so I don't know if people would make that connection somewhat easily.
Gudas got 6%.
Yeah, I think he'd probably get... I actually wonder if Niskanen might get a little higher than him because of how well he did in Philly. Because I know Goody struggled his 1 year in Washington. For Sens Flames, I'm trying to remember if Curtis Lazar was a Flame. I know he was a top draft pick by Ottawa, and I think I'm just confusing the color schemes.
Curtis Lazar was a Flame.
Do you think he was?
I'm going to put it in.
That sounds right.
We'll find out. I feel like he was.
That sounds right.
He was. Sure. 8%.
Yeah. Okay.
Ah, boo.
Not good enough for Andrew.
Yeah, no,
I know that's not good enough for
Andrew.
We don't
have our sound effects guy. He's slacking.
JJ, get over there.
I have responsibilities?
Yeah, you do.
And I thought I was just a listener with perks.
Your perks are the sound effects. Sens Hurricanes. This is an interesting one. Was Max Lajoie in Carolina? I don't think so. I don't know about that one. That's tough. I've got a great one for Senators Hurricanes. And it is another... Oh, but maybe I should use him for the Flyers Hurricanes because a great sicko pick would be Patrick Brown.
Oh, gosh. I forgot about...
Yeah, somehow played well enough last year to get us a 6th-round pick at the deadline.
20-plus goals Hurricanes.
There's some candidates there. Alex Semin came to mind as someone who could be a dark horse. I'm pretty sure he got there. Yeah, he had a point per game season in the lockout year, 2012-13 with
1%.
Carolina. Yeah, he seems like a good one for that too. He also got old school with someone with the Whalers because they count for Carolina.
I think
we're
gonna put Alex Ovechkin for 20.
Gee, you think
got a few
Sens Caps. Johnny OG was never a Capital. Sens Caps. This is a tricky one. Gabrick's a no. Chris Tierney's a no. Sheary's a no. Halak's a no. Craig Anderson would work, but he's probably going to get a high score. It's got to be 15% at least for Anderson, if not way higher.
Craigie?
Craig Anderson.
Craigie got 15%.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, so I'm
used to love when the Canadians
down.
Played Craig Anderson. Yeah. And beat Craig Anderson. I like Craig Anderson.
As you should. I'm annoyed by how not confident I am in my guesses so far. I don't know why. It's just a weird feeling today.
Have you done Kane's 20-plus yet?
I said Semin got 1%.
Ah, that's right.
But I'm sure you could think of some other people, too. I wonder if Andrew Ladd got there when he was there early in his career, or Mark Recchi later in his career. I know both those guys were on the 06 team. But remember, it has to be with Carolina. It can't be with another team.
Yeah, Andrew Ladd did not get there.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was very early in his career, so that doesn't shock me.
11 max.
Yeah. I'm not sure about who was the other person who said Recchi.
Mark Recchi.
Well, I don't know if he was even there for a full season, Recchi. He might have just been a deadline pickup.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 7 at 1%.
It was part of a 28-goal season, but he only scored four of them with Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I kind of figured that. But yeah, I think we filled out every square then, even if I have only... Even if I haven't put any of those guys in mind yet. Yeah, what the heck. Yeah, I'm just going to go for it. Lazar. Yeah, 8%. I'm going Pitkinen for Flyers Hurricanes. Let's see. Yanni Pitkinen, 4%. I'll go Patrick Brown and enjoy the sicko pick for Hurricane Sens, 0.5%. I also thought that would be lower. Alex Semin, 1%. Flyers, Richards. I'm going to go with Neuvirth, 5%. That's about what I was expecting. I might hold off on Sens Capitals, though, because 22 is really good. I had the same thing happen with the baseball one today, too. I got a 40. I was at a 21, though, through 8 picks.
Oh,
and then
you dropped.
19% on Troy Tulowitzki for Rockies.
Troy Tulowitzki continuing to disappoint.
He was. What are you talking about? Troy Tulowitzki was great.
He was a great player.
Prime Tulo was insane.
A good player. I'm thinking of
Donaldson. Like, Rockies Tulowitzki was like top five shortstop
Donaldson
in the league.
MVP.
Yeah, but for the rest of his career, he was only ever like he's like kind of a wanderer.
At the very end, I guess, but like.
Blue Jays Tulowitzki, that's when it was over.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. I'm sorry for selling Troy Tulowitzki's good name on a hockey show, but.
Yeah, Donaldson. I mean, he had the good start to his career with Oakland, then the MVP. Yeah, he had a couple really good years. He had 3 straight years with an OPS over 930. But he's only gotten to 900 one other time. That was with Atlanta in 2019.
He did have a cool nickname, though.
Yeah, the Bringer of Rain. And he'll be the show cover athlete.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, 2016.
Curse.
That is true. Although the Jays did make the ALCS that year, so didn't hurt them that much. All right. We can move on from Puck-Doku. I'm not going to lie. I definitely should have updated this NHL news thing throughout the last week because there's definitely stuff that's happened that I've just forgotten about. But why don't we take something that Murph reminded me of a couple days
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that last night, or I saw that on Saturday night, and I was like, "Oh, we're talking about this on Monday. We're talking about this on Monday."
Senators, Maple Leafs, Ridly Greig, whose fun fact, his father Mark Greig is actually a scout for the Flyers.
Okay. Andrew McGinnis never failing to make a Flyers connection.
Yeah, no, never, absolutely. So Senators up by 1 with like a minute and a half to go. Greig gets a breakaway, empty net. He's gonna put the game away. Decides to take a slap shot to put the puck into the empty net. Morgan Rielly of Toronto did not like that. Went over, immediately cross-checked in the face. Whole scrum ensued. We know Greig is fine, but Rielly is getting an in-person hearing, which means the NHL has the option to suspend him for more than 5 games. Guys, what are your thoughts first on just the sequence overall and the hockey code that was supposedly broken with the Greig slap shot?
I think it's just another moment for the Leafs canon of crazy, absurd moments you have to laugh at them for because that's not even the code. That's just sore losing. I'm going to sound like a real like sports talk FM radio host with this.
Wait,
right
I just
now.
Thought of, sorry, I thought of another Senators Capitals player, but I honestly might score worse than Craig Anderson. Connor Brown.
Oh, yeah.
He was only with Washington for like 9 games, but he was kind of high profile.
Yeah. Well, anyway, No, you're good. The Senators talk brought it to mind. Yeah, that's not even in the code. Like he could slap it into the net. Like I don't understand what Morgan Rielly's so PO'd about, quite frankly. You lost the game. But this is totally Habs fan talk right now too. Like love to see it. And I don't like the Senators by any means, but I always like to see the Leafs lose.
I think it might have been the frustration for Toronto boiling over. They have really struggled against Ottawa the last few years.
Yes.
They've had some really bad losses this year. They're winless against Chicago in 2 games, but, I mean, that's all they play because it's an opposite conference team. I did kind of like some of the take from, like, Steve Dangle, who I know we've mentioned a lot on this show, and that, like, he was just happy that, like, someone, like, showed passion and, like, just didn't mope about them losing.
Isn't that low, though? Don't we think that's a pretty low bar to set?
I mean, yeah, it is.
For
but
showing
I think
passion.
I mean, the...
To show passion with 3 seconds, I don't know how long
winning
late
6
in the
playoff
game.
Games in a year isn't that high of a bar either, and the Leafs haven't cleared
that
in a long time.
You make a
time.
Good point. You make a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah, I find this interesting. I mean, I'll make a comparison to baseball on this, because what this most reminded me of, and this was kind of the first time I've really seen the unwritten rules of hockey come up, it reminded me of 3 or 4 years ago. You had those couple of moments where I think Fernando Tatis Jr. Yep. hit a grand slam on 3-0 in the COVID season, and his entire team was not happy about it, and he was getting a lecture in the dugout after hitting a grand slam in a blowout. And then the year after that, what was it, your mean Mercedes, that random White Sox catcher was really good for half a year, hit a homer off a position player, might have been 3-0 again.
I think it was.
Tony La Russa was very upset about it, called him out publicly, and that kind of started the downfall of that young man's career. And I just found it very interesting, the difference in reactions that those two things got, sort of, because, I mean, and it might just be a byproduct of the way hockey and baseball fans are, but it seemed like the baseball moments that happened a few years ago, the unsportsmanlike moments, especially the Tatis Jr. one, were viewed much more by fans as you really shouldn't do that. But I didn't understand that because, I mean, these are players fighting for stats and numbers that can come up in contract time. And, I mean, players don't like to waste at bats generally. But then on the other hand, you had something like this where,
he's getting the goal one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. It's taking a slap shot or not. I mean, that does nothing but add flair to it. I mean, I can see it a little bit because, it's at the end of the game. Sometimes it's rewarding or it's a hard-fought battle and you just let your emotions out like that. But, I found just with what I saw on social media that hockey fans in general took the Ridly Greig play, a lot more kind of lightheartedly. And
certainly.
Yeah, I saw a video. It was like five ways Ridly Greig should score his next empty netter.
Yeah.
It was like he does a Michigan, he does like a pool shot.
Yeah, I mean, hockey fans seem to love it, which I found very interesting just considering what happened in baseball kind of stood for and what happened in Ottawa over the weekend stood for in terms of actual impact it has on the game itself,
Yeah.
That's kind of more of an analytical take on it from my part. I found that really interesting.
That's a very good comparative analysis, if you will. Like, I mean, you just scared the living life out of me right there. Jacob Irons just walked into the studio and scared me. And I lost my train of thought. Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I didn't even think about that, really. But I don't know if there's some, I don't think you're disrespecting the game by doing what Ridly Greig did. Whereas I think you could make a case for Tatis or for Mercedes having done that, right? But the other thing to me, right, is that, who are you disrespecting when you take a slap shot in an empty net? The goal? The puck? who is getting hurt? No one is getting hurt. You can't take it like a guy hurt your teammate when he does that. Because it's not hurting anybody. I don't understand.
Yeah, I think it's a little old fashioned on both sides of the debate.
Well, it was old fashioned. It was beyond old fashioned a little bit. You know,
I think everyone can agree that the action of the specific action Riley did was out of line.
Yeah,
it's more of should he have gone after him in a lesser capacity?
Right. Right.
Also, I'll point out that along with Jacob Irons and JJ Post, if we had a Puktoku category that was Flames prospects, and the other category has been on the Golden Ticket podcast, Jake Boltman would have worked in there. So you have Jimmy Collins, who just dropped a new episode. Make sure to check that out on all your podcast platforms.
At this current rate, how many people are we going to have in this studio by the final episode of the semester? We add someone new every week.
He was here last week.
Yeah, he was here last week. Come on.
Yeah, but he wasn't here from the start.
Jimmy,
this week
we
he was
hear
here
you.
From
I'm
the
sorry.
Start.
I don't hear anything coming from you.
No, you're good.
We need an interpreter.
Hey, I was here last week, though. I don't deserve
let
that
the,
slack.
Let the record show.
Let the record show.
Yes. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes left. I have two things on here. I think we only have time to do one.
Whoa, hold on. 10 minutes? Let's do 7 minutes. Let's make sure we're getting this poor lady her studio. I feel bad.
Well, and I don't think that's... because the other people finished right at... Oh, yes,
no,
they
did not.
They
finished
not.
At 6:56 for us.
Oh, okay.
We got to pass it on.
We're just late arrivers, aren't we?
We got to pass it on. We got to pass it on.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, we have 6 minutes left, so we really only have time to do one of these things. So we can do the three tiers thing again, this time with cup contenders, or we could maybe look at some trade deadline candidates and do a little bit of a deadline preview, or something else, honestly. I saw JJ's Be Real comment wanted to talk about how much the Devils suck.
They do.
You got the outdoor games coming up this weekend. So now, at
Battle
least,
of Mid,
now
2024.
You have the chance to suck in front of the Jonas Brothers.
Can we talk about the Isles jerseys?
Can we talk about the jerseys? They're horrible.
Do we want to? Is that what we're spending the last 6 minutes?
They're horrible.
Probably not. I don't think we can devote that
they're
much
horrible.
Time to them, but it's not good.
They're horrible.
Yeah. What's the vibes here? We can also talk about something else. We can talk about, I don't know if we want to do a quick team whip around.
I like cup contenders. Okay. I don't mind that. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything. I could talk. Yeah. I saw the Rangers on Friday night, and I
do want to hear your take. Yeah, tell us all about your NHL experience.
I first NHL game I've been to in like 3 years. Yeah. So great experience at the United Center. Really enjoyed it. Was
Miss Shamrock for it.
Thanks, Jake. Did
not the only one.
That makes three. No, all three of my hosts in there today.
I had a legitimate conflict.
And me.
Yeah, and my and production staff minus Jimmy. So I air my grievances later. But continue.
Jimmy celebrating the loyalty.
Who was at Shamrock on Friday?
Not enough people. Let me just say.
I came away pretty impressed by the Rangers. Listen, that week they beat the Avalanche in regulation. They beat the Lightning in regulation. And they took the Blackhawks to overtime, which was funny, right? But that's
got a point.
But I would throw the Rangers in my top tier of Stanley Cup contenders. I think they're deep. They got good goaltending, and the way they played, particularly in the first and second periods of first half of the game, really against the Blackhawks. Now, granted, the Blackhawks aren't maybe the worst team in the league. I would say they're probably the worst team in the league. I don't know what the standings say.
The standings agree.
Okay, they agree. But, I mean, the way they moved the puck in transition was crisp. It was as crisp as any NHL team I've seen in a while. And particularly on the rush, like, they are automatic. Middle lane drive every single time. They do all the little things really well, which of course they're NHL players. Of course they do all the little things well. Okay. But they're deep.
Yeah. 4 straight wins for the Rangers, tied with Calgary for longest active winning streak in the league. I'm gonna go first here for my tier one. I'm gonna put Boston in there. I'm gonna put Florida in there. I think Florida's legit. The Rangers have kind of been inconsistent. I'm a little bit worried at this point in the year with Shesterkin that we haven't seen a major bounce back. I think I might put them in tier two, if I'm being honest. I can see tier one mainly because, like, they are first in the Metro right now, and Carolina hasn't quite been themselves either for most of the year, although they have won 7 of their last 10. I'd say that's probably the easiest division to come out of right now, especially because, that team sitting in the number 3 spot, I mean, just the warm and fuzzies. I don't think they're going particularly far. If they even do make the playoffs, which is certainly not a guarantee, but the fact that we're even talking about the Flyers being in the race is bonkers. I'm also going to put Dallas in that tier. I think I have to put Vancouver. Maybe I put Colorado in too. No, I'm keeping Colorado out. Colorado starts tier two for me, but that's my tier one. Vancouver, Dallas, Bruins, Panthers. I'm going to say Rangers are in two as well. That's my top four. Tyler,
and you think Shesterkin's keeping the Rangers out of?
I think for now, and their 5-on-5 play, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe their 5-on-5 metrics are once again not the greatest.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that from the.
Remind me who you have from the West?
Vancouver and Dallas.
Okay.
Vegas is also going to be a tier two team for me.
Yeah. I definitely agree with Boston, Florida.
You know who I'm also putting in tier one? Sorry, Edmonton.
Ooh. Oh,
yeah. Wow. I mean, they just won 16 straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you ignore the first month of the season, which I know you can't do for standings purposes, but it's easy for like morale purposes, especially since they have a new coach. They're as good as anyone.
Well, I'll start in the East. I think I'm a little bit more inclined to put the Rangers in a tier one. I think it's easy to forget that, you know, we're only 2 years removed from this same Rangers core reaching and competing in Eastern Conference Finals with a Tampa team, and it's, you know, back-to-back-to-back Stanley Cup Final era. And obviously last year what happened with the blown series against New Jersey, but, I mean, that this core's still been there, and I don't think I hate the goaltending setup as much as you might, Andrew, because...
I mean, I believe in Shesterkin. I'm just a little worried.
But, I mean...
The margin is close. It's honestly more the 5-on-5 play. That's
if worse comes to worse, at least you have an ability to potentially ride a hot hand in the playoffs. That's kind of what the Blackhawks had to do in that last run in 2015. You know, I think Corey Crawford got knocked around a little bit by Nashville round one. Scott Darling came in and saved the day. Maybe something similar happens with Jonathan Quick. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, I certainly see your concerns on that, but I'm a little bit more inclined with New York. Boston, Florida, I'm good with as well.
You know, fun fact, Boston actually has a worse expected goals percentage at 5.15 than the Rangers.
Really?
49.76%.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, in the West.
They find a way.
In the West, I will get another look at Vancouver in person tomorrow night. That'll be nice. But yeah, they looked really good first time I saw them. I'm going to end up having seen them both times there in Chicago.
You're going tomorrow night?
I am, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a freshman in my section who's a Canucks fan, and he was
nice.
Like,
hey, oh, no way.
Hey, you wanna come to the United Center so you can see my team beat the heck out of your team? Like, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah.
Okay, we gotta go rapid fire here because it is
66. Yep.
I'll go first. My tier two, like I said, Colorado. I've got Winnipeg in there as well. I'm gonna put Vegas in there. I'm gonna put Carolina and the Rangers in there, and I think that's gonna be it. Okay. Murph, tier two.
Yeah,
I'll just keep it short. I'm not even going to go to tiers. I'm going to give you my one team that I'm not including in my tier one. I told you I'm including one team for sure in my tier one. The Rangers, not in tier one. Not in tier one is Vancouver. I'm not convinced of Vancouver.
That's fair. I like
the goaltending. I think the goaltending's kept them alive. I'm not convinced it'll be consistent, as with the rest of the roster in the playoffs.
Yep. I feel the same way a little bit right now. I love the Edmonton pick for tier one. I'd wait a little bit, you know, knowing that we have 2 months left with them, but I think they're knocking on the door, and I like Dallas. They've got to get over the hump, I feel like, at some point, and yeah, maybe this could be it. We'll see.
My tier three quickly, too. I'll say Tampa, Toronto, and LA. Yep, those are my three teams for tier three. Tier three is kind of short for me.
Dallas Stars average age 28.8, third highest
now or
in the
never.
League.
Mm. Although now I feel like never. They do have a lot of young talent. There's a couple guys
Certainly.
Skewing that, like Duchesne and Suter. Like they it's not like they don't have any good young players. Pavelski, obviously. But yeah, it's the time for them. Obviously, if we were doing this tier ranking based on the power of friendship and vibes, Flyers would be infinite. Yes. I still think that
time
maybe
for Dallas
the
and
I don't know.
Time
we'll
for us on
yeah.
Great transition, Murph. Fantastic.
Hey.
Other than I have to reach over here and type in the password. Unless Jacob Irons is gonna take care of it for me. It's not letting me click and put the password in. So I really hope he can, because I'm having trouble over here. And I might need some of this. Oh no, it never came off. It came off. That's all for this week of Five for Fighting Irish. Next week, we'll be talking Notre Dame, Minnesota, the final home series of the year for the Irish, unless they make a big run right down the stretch for the second straight year. Trade deadline will be even closer. We'll see if there's some more moves to talk about. And, of course, the one and only Puktoku will be played once again. For Tyler Reedy, for Ryan Murphy, for Jacob Irons, for JJ Post, for Jimmy Collins, I'm Andrew McGinnis. Good night from Duncan. It's so good. I'm going for a final countdown there. I don't know if you want. I figured you would. I'm not gonna lie, I don't know if I'm good at my pitches. What is the Notre Dame on Peacock intro? That's a good point. Look that up. Is it just the NBC one? They have an NBCSN college hockey team. What's the Notre Dame on Peacock mean? Hey, buddy.